Welcome to Gospel Mission Church's Message Podcast. We pray that God will meet you in this time with a fresh revelation of His love for you and that you will be challenged to align with the amazing plans that God has waiting for you. Here's this week's message from Pastor Claude.
Our home, our nest. And it's to make our home a nest where we can say, home sweet home. Like I mentioned last week, there's a lot of stress when it comes to life. A lot of pressure from work, from culture, and so on. And we want to be able to go to a place where we can hang our hat, put our feet up, and say, wow, I'm home, right? It's like it's awesome to go on holidays, and many of us right now, we're looking at our calendar, and we say, hey, I can't wait to go on holidays. But it's amazing to come back home. Would you agree? And you want to be like that. You want to say, hey, it's good to be home. And so what this series is all about is how do we make our home a nest? And I believe one of the first way it's to look at our marriage. For you that are married and for you that are not married, maybe one day you'll be married. But the principles that I will unpack, I believe, can be applied in every relationship. But when it comes to this topic today, I'd like to talk about my marriage, my nest. And I believe that we're called to have, our marriage should be a nest where it should be home sweet home. One of the things that we need to realize and we need to remind ourselves is that there's nothing on this planet more important than relationships. Nothing like relationships. Relationships are the most important thing. Our relationship with God and our relationship toward each other. Relationship is the heart of how God made us. God didn't want us to be alone. God made us to live in community. God made us to minister to one another. God made us to receive ministry from other people. So when it comes to marriage, when it comes to family, we don't want to see our relationships fade away. We don't want to see a wedge in a relationship between husband and wife, between siblings, between parents and children. What we want is we want to walk in unity and we want to walk where we function together. At the same time, we understand there's challenges, right? The reality is there's no perfect couple. The reality, there's no perfect marriage. There's no perfect family. But one of the things that we're called to do, it's to work and to invest and to have a vision for our home. The reality is that we all have needs. How many of you have needs? Stupid question, right? We all have needs. We all have wants, right? We all have certain expectation. And what I'd like to talk about this morning is what happens when your needs, when your wants, when your expectations are not met. So what do you do when in marriage your needs are not met? What do you do in marriage when your expectations or your wants are not happening? How do I function? What do I do? The reality is we understand that when it comes to marriage, if marriage is all about seeing my needs being met, where the focus is on me, I, myself, it won't go well. Would you agree? For those that have a little bit of experience in this journey, we totally get that if you get married or if you're married and the focus is on I, it's not gonna go well. Actually, when you get married, you gotta change pronouns, right? It's not I anymore. It's we, right? It's not me, it's us. And if there's no us, if there's no we, if there's no togetherness, then your marriage will not go very well. And so it's important for us to realize that when it comes to have a healthy nest, a healthy relationship, I need to adopt new pronouns. And sometimes as we journey, you might be married for a while, you might be tempted to go back to the I, right? The I is amazing. It's all about me, that you would do things my way. You know, instead it's all about you. That's an old song we used to sing in church. Maybe you're looking at me and say, what are you singing? What? But the reality is that one of the challenges we have is that we forsake or we forget the us. Such a battle to keep the us in play. such a battle to make sure that us is in the center of the nest of marriage, and not to be caught up with the I and the me, and to fighting for the I, fighting for the me, and fighting to for your own rights, as much as you do have rights. And for sure, when it comes to marriage, like I said, marriage is with two imperfect people, but at the same time, we understand that some of us are struggling in our marriage, and we want to see God intervene. And so, but when it comes to our marriage, we need to realize that what is central in our marriage, and sometimes we don't really see it, is my relationship with God. My relationship with God is central in my relationship, in my marriage, in my relationship with my kids, because God influences me. The reality is there's a lot of needs that people can meet. There's a lot of needs I have that people cannot meet. When it comes to joy in my heart, or when it comes to deep sense of peace, when it comes to purpose, when it comes to being carried through, I can have help from other people, but when God steps in, it changes all the norms, it changes all the degrees. When God steps in, He makes a big difference. And so what we want is to understand that if we want to see our home be a nest, if we want to see our marriage be a nest, we got to put God in the center. And my relationship with God will significantly, can you say to your neighbor, significantly? Significantly influence your relationship in marriage. It will. Guaranteed, it will. When you start to pray, when you start to turn to God, something happens. When you start to worship, something happens. So the truth is we gotta turn to God, and only God can meet the real need that we have. There's a quote if you wanna put up. The truth is, there's no perfect marriage. The goal is a God-centered marriage where two imperfect people keep turning. That's the key word, turning to God and keep turning to each other. When tension comes, when stress comes, finances, business, everything that happens, this is where the tension is. Turning to God or not to turn. Turning your back or turning to see the face when it comes to your relationship. And that's the battle that we face. That's why we need God. God, help me to turn to you. And God, help me not to turn my back to my spouse, to my family, to my kids. And sometimes we turn our back, not because we want to turn our back, but it's because of hurts, because of circumstances. And what happened is that in many occasions, that's how we protect ourselves, right? And so we protect ourselves by turning our back. And when we do this, we just create more issues. And so the reality is, when you look at this quote, I think it's an amazing quote. That would resume or sum up my message. And so just to say, you still have to continue to follow with me, even though that's the heart of my message. We want to turn to God, and we want to continue to turn towards each other. The reality is that we have needs. And we have legitimate needs, and there's a list that's gonna come up there of different needs that we have in marriage. The first one, not the least, is spiritual needs. We want to have a God culture where the focus is on God's presence, where prayer is central, where faith is present, where godliness is sought, where we have a kingdom-focused living. I believe that if that's desired, I think it's gonna influence your house significantly, but that's a need. We were all created with an empty hole that only God can fill. Second one is love. It's to receive love and to give love. Thirdly, we need respect to be valued and honored. We need friendship. It's wanting to do to be together, to do life together, enjoying one another's company, to holidaying, to vacationing together, playing together, being together. And that friendship is huge in a marriage. There's a need for safety, where it's safety emotionally and physically and financially, where there's a peaceful environment. How many of you like a peaceful environment? Like, there's nothing like peace, right? Would you agree? Peace is such a big deal. When we don't have peace, it's not good. It's when you have the absence of peace that you see the value of peace, right? Peace is big. It's something you fight for. It's something that you really want. And it's not like just peace at any cost, but life-transforming peace where you are able to function together. So there's a need for peace. There's a need for trust linked to faithfulness, confidence in each other, where we trust each other, communication, a place where there's freedom to share, a place to be heard, a place to be understood, and there's a difference between the two, but you still want to be heard, but you really want to be understood. A place for affection and intimacy, emotional and physical, there's closeness, and we understand we're all wired differently. And one of the books that I remember reading many years ago by Chapman that was called The Five Languages of Love, just to know a bit how we're wired, it can be a very helpful book to read. Number 9, acceptance and encouragement to celebrate and not just tolerate, not just to be tolerated or not just to tolerate, but to really celebrate, to rejoice, to bless, to bring up or to raise people up. We want to see that, right? And so it's to celebrate, not just to tolerate or to be constantly criticized, but to have a positive environment where we build each other up. And last is to share purpose, where we're a teamwork, where there's teamwork in the house, around the house, in life, where we're functioning together as a team and we're moving forward. So these are legitimate needs. And I believe they're important for us because if we want to see our home be a nest, I believe that we need to see that, but it's linked to the us, it's linked to the we, and it's our calling, and it's something that grows. So that's one of the first needs. The second need that we have is soul needs. Soul needs is linked to your journey, linked to what you've experienced. And sometimes people don't always get your soul need. You might talk, you might be in your premarital counseling and you might hear the soul need of someone and you say, okay, that's pretty deep. Like for example, one of my brother-in-law was raised in a household where his dad gambled. And he gambled a lot. And when it came to food, there was not a lot of food. And so what he did when he was a kid, he ate a lot of bread. And so if you go to my brother-in-law for supper or to my sister, my brother-in-law, they don't have bread on the table. Say, why don't they have bread on the table? It's because he says, no, I won't have bread. I won't have fillers on the table. I'm going to feed my kids. My fridge will always be full. And so he lived with that. That was a value for him. That was important for him. That was a need for him. But someone may say, well, it's okay to have bread. Yeah, it's okay to have bread. But for him, it reminded him of his past. I look at my parents. My mom did grade 3 in school. My dad did grade 6. And my dad would have liked to continue schooling, but he wasn't able to because he was the oldest son of 17 kids. And so he had 16 siblings, and so he had responsibility. And my mom always felt inferior, always felt not good enough. She would write, like in our birthday card, and then she would write a lot because she was afraid of doing spelling mistakes. You got to remember there was no Google then, right? And no chat. And so for her, reading was a big deal, and she learned to read better. But the thing, writing was a big thing for her, and she felt in many times it played on her self-worth. So guess what was important for her, for us? Go to school. There's no way that we would not go to school because it was a value for her based on how not being not going in school, how it affected her. So for her, it was a soul need, right? And so there's some soul needs, there's real need. And as we walk together as a couple, we want to see we want to see together. We want to meet those needs, right? And thirdly, there's comparative wants. And this is where I shift from needs to wants, is to keep up with the Jones or keeping up with the weebs, I have to say here, right? Where it's not a need anymore, it's a want. You're comparing yourself. You want to have what others have. You want to have the vacations of your brother-in-law. You want to have this, you want to have that. And it creates a lot of tension and a lot of pressure. And you see that often. I bet if we would have an open mic and we would talk about family matters and we would talk about friends and people at work, it's really an issue. It's really an issue where we do our life based on comparing and we're never happy. And it really steals away the need for us to live with contentment. And when we try to live up and it puts so much stress on one another, if the husband is looking and he wants to compete or the wife wants to compete, both wants to compete, it can be very, I would say it's not fun, right? Would you agree? It's not a fun thing to do. So you don't want to be caught with wants that is linked to comparing, let's say, oh, I'd like to see if my husband has his muscles, or his abs, and I won't show you mine, because I've got one ab, but at the same time, they're all there, but they're all hidden, right? Maybe I'm saying too much here, I apologize. When we fall in the trap of comparing, it's a slippery slope, and so it's a joy killer, so you don't want that. And then you have cultural and social expectations, where views come from society and media, where the main goal is happiness. If you're happy, then who cares about the rest? When society defines our view on sexuality and romance and pornography and commitment, where pornography defines our sexuality, when Hallmark defines romance, right? It's you watch this Hallmark movie where this guy brings his date to Paris to have wine, and then you look at your husband. See, he hasn't shaved for the last 3 days or 4 days, and he's making funny noises. And you say, God, how come? Right? You're being fed by the romance of this world. And a husband enters a marriage and he has pornography in the back of his mind, and he wants to reproduce that in the bedroom. And then it brings conflict, and the other person doesn't understand, and it brings such a disconnection. And so we don't want to have culture define what love is, what sexuality is, what romance is. We don't want to see that. And so we want to be careful about the expectations that we set. But the question I have this morning is, how do I respond when my needs are not met? What do I do when things don't go my way? For example, when you get married at first, like, hey, honeymoon, amazing. You start your life together, it's amazing. But as you're going forward and as you're having kids and life gets busy, then it gets a little challenging. And then what may happen is that your needs are not met, your expectations are not met, your wants are not met. And what do you do? What do you do, right? And one of the first thing that we might do is we might shut down, withdrawal, when we become an oyster. How many oysters here, right? You don't have to raise your hand, please, it's all good. Like when you shut yourself down that you don't talk anymore, it's like keep everything inside, right? And you come to a point where you stop sharing, you stop trying, why bother? It won't change. And then what happens is that you start to drift away. Maybe it's the opposite. You lash out. Like you reach out of frustration, sharp words, irritation. I remember meeting, I was called one day to go and walk with this couple. They were married for 50 years, long time. And I went into that house. It was a war zone. It was so unreal. They were shooting each other down. I saw them in church, and it looked fine and dandy. But when you arrive in that home, it was like grenades and bombs, and it was like no filter. They were just shooting each other. And they were carrying symbolically this big book, and where they took note of everything, of all the past 45 years ago. 40 years ago, and they list and list. And I was asked to go into that setting many, many occasions. And I was just heartbreaking. And I was really learning, God, I don't want to see my marriage come like this. I don't want to end up one day like that. And so I really caught the need for communication that I will elaborate in a moment. So thirdly, do we build inner narratives where we invent a storyline, where we read between the lines, where we create a truth that is not a truth but has become a truth for you? Like the thought, like maybe I married this wrong person. And you start to nurture that, and then you start to read all the behaviors and the action and try to convince yourself that you married the wrong person. That is not very good. When you do inner vows and you say, no more, I'm not going to try to work it out. And when you protect yourself in this way, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. And so what may happen, it might bring you to number four, where we look elsewhere to fill the needs and desires. Because we know an affair doesn't happen overnight. We know that to sleep in the basement or to experience Mennonite divorce where you're in the same house but you live two separate lives doesn't happen overnight, right? It's when you don't deal with the hard issues and you let it rise up and take control of your life. And so here, it might lead you to a place where you look elsewhere and you want to feed your need and your desire. It might be through work. It might be through hobbies, distraction, or even an unhealthy relationship, right? We may become indifferent where we harden our lives, our hearts, where we voluntarily harden our hearts. We choose to harden our heart. Because it's like, you know, sometimes it's not fun to be under conviction, right? It's like to come to a point where it doesn't affect you anymore. It's kind of a good feeling, right? And so let's say, like, and I gave that as example in the past. Like, I remember the first night I slept on the couch, I didn't sleep very well, right? But imagine if I want, in my relationship with my wife, my desire, it's to harden my heart so I can sleep on the couch so it doesn't bother me anymore, right? And you don't do that the second night, but as you go forward, you want to protect yourself and you want to remove the guilt, you want to remove the conviction, so you choose willingly to harden your heart so it doesn't hurt anymore. And then when conflicts arrive, because it will arrive again, you can have a smile. And the person says, like, how come you have a smile? You shouldn't be happy. Well, I'm fine. And you are fine because you've hardened your heart, but really you're not fine, right? It doesn't affect you anymore. It should affect you. If you sleep on the couch, you should not be comfortable on the couch. If it makes two nights that you're sleeping in the basement and you are, there should be happening something in your heart. Like I'm talking about with the wrong, like, because there's all kind of reason. If let's say your husband snores like a tractor and you have to sleep because there's things happening the next day, I'm not talking about that, right? I'm talking when you harden your heart willingly, it's not good, right? So we don't want to do that, right? We don't want to do that. And so also, when we track scores and track failure, marriage becomes a score sheet and we stop celebrating and we start scoring. That's not a good thing, right? It's not a good thing. I like what James chapter 1 verse 19 says. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. So we want to see transformation. So what do we do? How do we respond to the unmet needs? We got to turn to God. You might say, Pastor, that's what you're called to do. That's what you're called to say. We're in church. You should say that. But the reality, turning to God changes the ball game. It changes everything when you start to pray. I like what Psalm 62 verse 5 says. Find rest, O my soul, in God alone. This is such an awesome verse, people. When you go before God, you'll find rest. And what happened is your soul will be met, give you what you need to go forward. So find rest, oh my soul, in God alone. And sometimes you have to lead yourself to that. You got to lead yourself to that. Find rest, oh my soul, in God alone. My hope comes from Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. Salvation, it's not just talking about salvation when it comes to accepting Jesus. He's my rescue. He's the one that comes to my help. He's the one that comes in my setting. He's my fortress. He protects me. He is not, I will not be shaken. So amazing. My salvation and my honor depends on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Trust in the Lord at all time, O people. Pour out your heart to Him. Can you say that to your neighbor? Pour out your heart to Him. Pour out your heart to Him, for God is our refuge. So amazing. Turn to God. Invite God in those places. Whatever you need, your need is, invite God. Say, God, come in this. Lead, reveal yourself. You see my heart. You see what we're dealing with. In Psalm 147, verse 3, see, He heals a broken heart, hearted, and binds up their wounds. You know? And maybe you're here this morning and you're struggling to love. You're struggling to extend arms of service and care and generosity to your wife, to people around you, because you're wounded yourself. And this is why you need to let God in. God, heal my heart. Come and rescue me. If I have blockage, hurts, and fears and sin in my life, I need to come to God. This is so essential. It really, really works, guys. It really does. You just got to make it happen. You got to go in His presence. You got to make Him your solution, you know? We need to separate the need from the narrative, my second point. Like, I'm not called to ignore the needs, but I can't make a story out of it. I can't write a book based on reading between the lines. It's so dangerous to create a scenario and to find myself in the deep end. And then I'm in the deep end and the person doesn't have a chance to redeem herself or himself, because you already came to a conclusion, because you have figured everything out and you have the whole story. But it might be a wrong story. It might be your story, but not the real story. So I've got to stop to do that. Stop doing that, you know? I can't fall in self-pity and negativity. And this is why Romans chapter 12, verse 2, a significant word that is so important for us and in so many areas when it comes to life. It says, don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. So I want to see a mind change. I want to see my thoughts being captive in Christ. I want to see God transform my mindset. I got to bring my mindset aligned with His will, with His word, according to how He functions and what He says. And then I will be able to discern what His will is. But if I follow the patterns or my own stories and my own storyline, I'll miss out on what God has in store. Thirdly, it's replace comparison with gratitude. You know, comparison feeds envy, but gratitude brings peace. Look what it says in Proverbs 14, verse 30. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots to the bone. So we don't want that. So you want to be positive. You want to give praise. You want to focus on what is there and not just focus on what is not there. Number four is you want to communicate it honestly, but without blaming. And I'm running out of time here, but I need to learn to talk. I need to learn to talk. Did you know that talking, it's an art? In marriage, when you start to talk and it doesn't go well, one of the things we do, we stop talking. But we got to continue because it's an art. You get better at it. The first time you have an argument, it's not usually very good. At first, it's very polite, blah, 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 blah. But when you're married and you have a few kids, boom, rah, you let it out. And it's not good because, even in hockey, there's rules, right? Even though we're in the playoffs right now, it seems like there's less rules. But a good thing there's rules, right? Well, it's the same thing when it comes to marriage. We got to learn to communicate. And we get discouraged. We throw the towel so quick because it doesn't work or we did not achieve what we wanted to achieve. And then we quit. And then we do our own stuff. Learn to communicate. It's an art. It's like learning a language, especially if you're an oyster or if you are a yapper. And then you got to control the yapping. And the other has to control, have to let it out because it's going to slip at some point and it's not going to be good. It's going to be an explosion. You got to learn to communicate, right? The tongue has the power of life and death, Proverbs 18:21. Embrace the process. Realize that we're all in a journey. Give patience. Allow your spouse to grow. I think that's huge. Philippians 1:6, being confident in this, that he who has begun a good work in you will carry it to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. So people are, we are with people that God is working on. Adjust expectations. I'll give you a little snapshot. I don't have a lot of time here, but my wife likes to play board games. I went to Costco last week and there was like a big box of cards to play cards and I bought one. And I brought it home, and it wasn't such a deal. My wife looks at me and says, "Oh, we're gonna play cards tonight?" I said, "No, not tonight, I'm too tired." So my wife would play games all the time. And so for me, if I play cards with her, I'll play a 3 out of 5. And hopefully it's gonna be a 3, not a 5. But the thing is, my wife will help me so that she can prolong the process of playing 5 games. But imagine if my wife, her expectations was for me to play always 10 games. She would be totally disappointed. But she's not called to mortgage her values, but there's a need to lower her standards and I've got to hire mine, right? And so then there's happiness because we're sharing together. So I think that's huge. It's to adjust your expectation. The last point is choose love first and be the first one to take the step. Can I challenge you with that? Be the first one to take the step. But Pastor, I'm always the one taking the first step. Well, continue to do it. Continue to do it. And don't hold back. Like Romans 12:21, don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. All right? I would ask you to stand.
Thanks for listening. If there's anything we can do to help you along in your journey, email prayer@gmchurch.ca. If you'd like to see what's coming up at Gospel Mission Church or learn more about us, visit gmchurch.ca.